What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Hello, one. Hello, all. Thank you for downloading this podcast about independent music and having conversations with people who are creating it, putting it out, documenting it, all of that fun stuff. We are having a conversation today with Brian Moss. He played in a band called The Ghost from the early 2000s. He currently plays under the moniker Hanalei. He's actually been doing this solo project ever since The Ghost was touring and actively putting out music. And he's been continuing to do it. He actually just released a new record called Black Snow that is really, really good. I've enjoyed all of the stuff that he has put out personally. And I felt like when this opportunity came across my desk, I was like, I would love to have a conversation with Brian, because The Ghost was just such an interesting band, because they, you know, they had a little bit of heat as far as the music industry is concerned, and people were interested in them and they were drawing some people. But then, you know, they broke up because obviously real life gets in the way. And, you know, the fact when you're not making any money on tour, that's rough after a while. But yeah, so I was like, I want to put a shine on The Ghost, and I want to put a shine on Brian's solo project. And I just found his conversation on this podcast to be incredibly engaging. He's been a teacher for many years, and I just wanted to share his story with you. And if you are not familiar with The Ghost, check it out. And if you are not familiar with Hanalei, please listen to it. He has a lot of records under his belt. But you can also reach out to this show. Email me at 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I accept any ideas, conversations you want to start. I just really like that feedback, because sometimes recording these podcasts, by myself and with another guest, like sometimes, you know, I just feel like I'm kind of putting it out to the internet, and I want to hear some feedback. So you can also leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That helps out this show. It legitimizes it. And I would appreciate that. If you've listened to this podcast for years and you've never done it, now's the time. Let's go. Let's do that. One last thing before we dive into the conversation with Brian. I got to watch a band live, which feels really, really weird to say, because, you know, we're over a year of us being, locked inside and not being able to you know, be in community like we all are used to. And so I went to Revelation Records, had a pop-up shop in their parking lot where they had a bunch of cool vendors, you know, like, you know, Program, which is an amazing skate shop / record store here in Southern California. There was also Peach's Bake Shop, which is an amazing vegan bakery. They don't have a storefront, but she does some amazing treats. And there are a bunch of other cool record labels, Trust Records, Maggot Stomp Records, which is run by an old friend of mine named Scott. And it was just an awesome vibe because I got to see people who I hadn't seen in over a year, and then you know, got to watch a band called Sweet Soul. They put out a record on New Mortality Zine, the record label, which I absolutely adore. And watching a band in a parking lot, I didn't think it was going to mean as much to me as it did, but it totally did. There were moments it was like, oh man, like, I love watching bands. I love watching, you know, people just react to music, and they had a lot of fun. They actually did a cover of the California Sun, and it was just fun. It just really reminded me why, obviously, I like music and like the aspect of watching music with others a lot. So thank you very much to Revelation Records. And yeah, it was really, really, really fun. So I look forward to sharing more of those moments with all of you in the future as we start to, you know, watch bands play again. But anyways, here's Brian, and I will talk to you at the end of the episode.
I 110% saw the Ghost play. I was trying to place it. Like, you guys for sure played Chain Reaction at one point, right?
Oh, tons, yeah.
Okay. And I want to say that walk me through your the tours that you came through on at Chain Reaction, because I'll identify the one that I actually saw you at.
There were so many, Ray. I don't think there's any way I could, okay, like, recall them all. I remember... So my band before the Ghost certainly played there as well, but I think the first time the Ghost played there was with Small Brown Bike and 12 Hour Turn, and a video that resurfaced recently, which was...
Yes, that, you hit the nail on the head. That was actually, that was an amazing show in general, but like, I was already a fan of what you were doing from that perspective at the Ghost. But it was, it was one of those things where, and I'm sure that this statement is not lost on you, where you, like, the Ghost is such a weird band. Like, you guys fit in everywhere and nowhere all at the same time, you know?
Absolutely. And that, you know, that tour was interesting because I felt like that was a little more aligned, at least with our interests and what we were listening to. And then, you know, by no means am I intending to throw shade on booking agents, but for a while we got put on pop punk tours, and that certainly wasn't our thing. And I think that we were far more out of place, on a pop punk lineup than we were with, say, Small Brown Bike.
Totally. And I think that was very indicative of that time, because it was like any band that had any sense of melody, it was like, oh, like, you know, you either tour with like Thursday or Boy Sets Fire, or then maybe you're touring, like, you know, fingers crossed, you can tour with like All American Rejects, and you're just like, well, is there anything else that we can do? Like, you know, I don't know.
It's like the false dichotomy. It's so, yeah, that's absolutely. And it's like, you know, we could have gone, if we had gone on tour with some huge pop punk band like All American Rejects, I think the impact would have actually been less, playing for thousands of their fans versus 50 of Small Brown Bikes, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, totally. And it's, and that's why I think with you guys in particular, the sound that you were not only creating, and obviously coming from Chicago, where it was like, there was this, like, you guys were kind of like a bridge band, for lack of a better term, where it was like, okay, clearly anybody that paid attention to the Chicago scene heard the influences and like all these things that you guys were pulling from, but then you were also pulling from all of these other sort of geographic regions as well, and trying to be like, you know, expand on whatever the quote unquote typical sound from Chicago was. Did that get reflected back on you? Like, did people kind of recognize that?
Yeah, I think so. And it, you know, honestly, it's a lot of it is we started that band in the Bay Area and moved because we couldn't afford to tour and live in Oakland or Berkeley. So we moved out there, just literally, I think I put a couple boxes on, you know, Amtrak freight and threw what I could fit in the van other than the gear. we toured out to Chicago with the Lawrence Arms, and then we lived there. And so I think that you had kind of this culmination of specifically very like punk East Bay sounds. And then the more time we spent in Chicago and the more, you know, subgenres of punk and hardcore indie rock that we were exposed to, that became an influence and, you know, weaved its way into our sound overall.
Sure, sure. That's interesting, because I did not know that the origins were in the Bay Area. That's interesting.
Yeah. So everyone in that band is from the Bay, and you know, like I said, just the price of the cost of living just became too immense to work around tours. You know, I was at one point a bunch of us were working temp jobs, just calling the temp agency in between tours. Oh, please give me work, and it's just like the worst shit. I remember one job I had was being on an assembly line at the Kaiser optical facility, literally just rinsing eyeglass lenses all day long, just stuff like that. So
yeah, and you're like,
so we move out there, and it's like, oh yeah, I emailed Brian Peterson, who's the booker at Fireside, and I had a little bit of a history with him. And I was like, hey, can I work at the venue? He said, oh yeah, sure. So I'm like, oh man, fuck the Bay Area. This is way better. You know?
Right. You're like, I can actually be at a place that, you know, understands my plight and, you know, isn't going to just like give me the worst jobs of all time.
Absolutely. And I think our first apartment, and we all lived together as a band, was no joke, $250 a month. And that was the early, you know, 2001, something like that. But even with inflation, you can figure that one out. I mean, there were blood stains from, you know, the violent hippie variety. I guess that's who had been occupying the apartment prior, and they had all, you know, they'd gotten into the needle scene, and so there was that. But you know, $250 a month, and that's total, not per person. You can't beat that. So.
Right. Yeah, that's incredible. Putting the focus squarely on you as a person, where did you come up? Where were you born and raised?
So there's in between El Cerrito and Berkeley, there's a little unincorporated township called Kensington. And I grew up there about, like, I don't know, it was a block off the Berkeley border. So, you know, for people that are unfamiliar with the East Bay, I'll generally say Berkeley to give them a sense of location. But yeah.
Got it. Yeah, no, I've never heard of Kensington, but yeah, obviously, you know, Berkeley looms large in our punk lives.
Right.
And so I'm going to guess that because of the, you know, adjacency to, you know, that whole area, was it kind of a more suburb life, or was it definitely more like, oh, we're connected in the city, so, you know, it's that kind of vibe?
It's, you know, in high school, I really found it to be fairly divided. You know, you're going to shows in Berkeley and Oakland, certainly, but I wasn't crossing the bridge much at that point. I'd go over there when I was really into skating. I'd go skate the SF spots, but I didn't go to a ton of shows in San Francisco. There, you know, a couple stand out in my memory, you know, really kind of larger bands. Like, I definitely saw Fugazi at Maritime Hall while I was still in high school, and that, you know, that was amazing. So I'd go over if it was something really important, but generally there was so much going on at, say, Gilman and the Berkeley Square, and then DIY venues or teen centers, stuff of that nature, that access is hard if you don't have a car, or your parents on your case not want you on BART late at night. So, you know, we had enough going on that we didn't necessarily need to go over there.
Right. And that it's pretty cool how, you know, especially that city, the, you know, the whatever, Oakland, Berkeley, and then, you know, across the Bay, like, there was so much happening from that perspective, but they could not be more different scenes. You know, it's like, you had, obviously, it's like the bottom of the hill on one side, and like, you know, I mean, Gilman and everything you're talking about. It's just so interesting to kind of look at it through that lens.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I got older, you know, I moved this summer, but prior to that, I spent, I think, 11, maybe 12 years in San Francisco, and you know, adored it, and found that music community to be, I don't want to say more inclusive, but more up to speed with where I was at for the past decade or so, and more aligned with my interests, musically, socially. I wouldn't say there's a large political difference between the East Bay and San Francisco, but you know, you get what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, totally. And so what was your upbringing like, you know, brothers and sisters in the house, mom and dad in the picture? Where did that stack up?
Only child, and yeah, mom and dad in the picture, certainly. My mom was a teacher as well, so I grew up kind of around education. My dad is very outdoors aligned, so there was a lot of that in my upbringing as well. He's a mountaineer and a climber, so we'd be up in the Sierras a lot. He got me into backpacking at a very young age, and that has made a lifelong impact. And it's, the outdoors, I'm sure we'll get into the new record at some point later, but it's something that I value immensely and have kind of built my life around, working, but having access to the ocean and the mountains. So I can spend time in nature as frequently as possible. But yeah, my parents are great. And, they instilled a lot of good values in me. I think, like a lot of people do, I saw them doing some shit that I wasn't fond of or that really upset me at times. And, as we get older and we realize that we, as much as we can resist or attempt to resist, becoming them or taking parts of them on, it's inevitable. So, you try your best to retain the positive qualities and weed out the bad behaviors or personality traits.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Especially too, like once you have the wherewithal to understand that like, oh, I didn't agree with why they did that or, that decision. It's like, yeah, I'm going to try to stay away from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, I don't want to get too into it, but I think, their relationship was sorted at points and I slowly and surely took notes on that and, try my best to not repeat that, in my marriage or in other relationships that I've been in the past. But overall, I would say that I was incredibly fortunate, and was raised with love and with, access to, the outdoors and some travel and, education. So yeah,
nope. That's awesome. That's awesome.
And it's only gratitude overall.
Sure. Sure. And what subject did your mom teach?
She taught elementary, so she was on, the multi-subject path. And then she worked most of her career, in Richmond, California, not the neighborhood in San Francisco, but the East Bay community, which is, it's changing now, but, at the time, 80s and 90s, it was very impoverished. A lot of, kids that were not being served, effectively or appropriately by the public education system. So she taught there and then went on to be a principal for a little bit, ended up really disliking that. So then dedicated the later part of her career to writing curriculum for kids in that community, that, was an alternative to the curriculum that was in place and clearly not working for them.
Right, right. Oh, that's cool that she was able to take that, interdisciplinary work and be able to kind of, spread that out and help other people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was certainly an influence for me.
Yeah. And it is interesting how many people that get exposed to the subculture that, we exist in, that, punk, hardcore, indie, whatever you want to call it, and do get attracted to teaching because it's like, it's almost that same sort of hand to mouth experience of like, oh, I do something and then this happens, like, whatever, I put out a tape and I'm able to play a show, or, if I do the, develop this, really cool lesson plan, I see in real time how kids are reacting to it. And it's just interesting that through line, like I see it, very often when I have these conversations.
Totally. And, I think that's a keen observation. I've kind of had to spoon feed that to other people in discussion before. And yeah, I think those parallels completely make sense. On one hand, there is, and you've referenced both these things, but there's kind of the performance aspect of it, right? I think that if you have experience playing in bands or you watch a lot of bands or, other performers, you realize in a classroom that you have to be captivating and engaging and entertaining to a degree in order to hold the attention of students. And then also, with having a punk background, there's so ethics is a huge component, right? And, an ideology of equality, and progression, improving the world at large. And, for me, that was really what I, strove for with writing and lyrics. That was always the component for me. And, how can I write in such a manner or what can I write about that is going to both comfort people that are struggling, and then inspire people to make positive changes, whether that's for themselves or, a larger community or, the world as a whole. And yeah. Obviously, like teaching. If you're not teaching with that in mind, or that's not a driving force, then I really would question your place in the field.
Totally. Yeah, it's like
they're out there. That's the thing. I've encountered a lot of them, and it's never a fun experience. And the kids kind of suffer as a result. But usually they get weeded out. Sometimes not.
Yeah. No, I agree wholeheartedly. It's so interesting when you're able to draw the conclusion when you see like the good teachers, and everybody can, you know, recount like maybe on one hand, like the teachers that really made an impact. But usually those are the ones that have some really, you know, either unique point of view, or obviously, like you said, being able to, you know, not relate to the students like, hey, I'm their best friend, you know, like the Steve Buscemi meme or whatever. Like, yeah, but yeah, no, that's really interesting. So how did, I guess, more independent-minded music sort of come to you? Because I'm going to guess that, you know, your parents probably weren't, you know, delivering Misfits records to you or whatever, or maybe they were, but, you know, how did that come to you?
So my mom, you know, she actually did. No, my mom just played Linda Ronstadt and Aaron Neville on repeat.
Nice.
Brutal. And my dad was into the Stones, and that's well and fine. I definitely go Stone side over the Beatles, but he would just sing "You Can't Always Get What You Want." And he's the most like tuneless man on earth. I don't know where I got any of the minimal musical abilities that I have. It was not from him. And he would do that whenever I asked for something and want to give it to me. So I kind of, you know, I obviously growing up in the Bay Area, or to a degree, any urban environment for that matter, you're going to be exposed to a little bit more than you would be out in the deep suburbs or in a rural environment. And there's just a lot of culture in the Bay Area, obviously. So, you know, I was into metal and grunge, and I remember in middle school, you know, checking out some hip hop or finding the college radio dial and hearing cool stuff there. But really what did it for me is I had three friends that were all kind of, they were this tight little pack of young women in middle school and early high school. And, you know, I became ingrained in that group, and two of them had brothers. I think one was a stepbrother. In bands, and the stepbrother one, he was in the Winona Riders on Lookout, and then the other young lady, her brother was Jesse Michaels from Op Ivy. Op Ivy had obviously disbanded. Well, not obvious, I guess, to your listeners, but I'm not that quite that old.
Right,
they had disbanded. You know, I'd say a solid handful of years prior. But the three of them, and the other one was just cool as shit and into really great music too, and they just kind of shared all of their tastes and resources with me. I had so many mixtapes that they made me, and that was, I'd say, how I was indoctrinated into punk, and really that it just snowballed from there completely. And it was fun too. You know, back then it's like, if you're finding about new music, it's word of mouth or it's zines, or, as I often did, I would just go down, you know, I had access to great record stores, Rasputin's and Amoeba, and I'd go down to Telegraph. And I would at times just literally, I'd be like, oh, that the cover of that record looks fucking punk. I'm going to buy it based on the cover, you know? And I think we still see that in American consumerism as a whole. You know, people will buy something based on a label or whatever. And, you know, often that didn't work out for me, that approach, but sometimes it did.
Yeah, I do love that when it is the, you know, the visceral nature of whatever the artwork is, where it's just like, I don't know what Subhumans sound like, but that sounds, that looks so cool.
Yeah, this cover looks heavy for sure. So,
right.
Absolutely. Well, it's, you know, like, I think too, then going on your own discovery path of, you know, older music, of more obscure artists, was a process too. And one that I enjoyed, and certainly one that took a lot of work. I'm not going to sit here and shake my cane, but it's like, it's overwhelming now, I would imagine, to youth that are trying to pinpoint or their tastes or explore, because it's the access of everything throughout like musical history at your fingertips is just wild. It's oversaturated, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. To be able to differentiate, you know, not only the wheat from the chaff, but then also understanding how certain things place in context, like, it's just, you know, yeah, I'm with you where it's like, you don't want to sound like old man on the porch, but it's just like, dude, if it's like constant fire hose, like you don't know what anything is, you're just like, well, I like this song, so I guess I like this band. It's like, okay, I guess that's where we're going.
Right. And that, you know, that goes into the concept too. I'd have to read up on this. I certainly wouldn't try to verify it myself or claim it as factual, but I hear a lot of discussion regarding the concept that people in, you know, younger generations do not listen to records in their entirety. It's more of like a single bass culture or one or two songs and then move on to the next thing. Like, just, you know, which I guess is maybe an evolution of the mixtape. Who knows?
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, you can definitely parse it in a million different ways and be like, oh, maybe there is an analogous way that this, you know, stacks up against, you know, the previous 10 years of music discovery or whatever. But yeah, well, that, I love, like, that's amazing that you had that experience with, like, I mean, Winona Ryders are a great band. And I mean, obviously being connected to Jesse Michaels, like having that in your orbit, like that's, that looms large.
Yeah. And you know what, like, obviously, you know, this too, certain bands don't hold up over time. And as our tastes evolve, or, you know, devolve, but
sure.
I still frequently listen to both those bands.
There's no way. I mean, there are certain starter kit bands. I mean, especially when you're talking about Op Ivy, it's just like, I dare somebody that is, you know, hasn't been exposed to that record that obviously considers themselves like, you know, punk in some capacity. It's like, that's a rite of passage. You got to have an Op Ivy record.
I mean, absolutely. And just, you know, as a lyrical influence, like that's, it's so advanced, you know, top five. Fight me on that. You know, if we're talking lyrics and punk, it's amazing to think of his age too when he wrote that. It's phenomenal lyrically.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. It's like when you put it all together and you're just like, man, if any of these things didn't work out like that, or, you know, if all cylinders weren't firing, like this wouldn't be good or wouldn't hold up, but it's just like, man, they hit it all out of the park.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've heard conversations too, regarding like how that, if you redid that record and actually produced it in a, well, at least conventionally good sounding way, like how it would just be awful. And I agree with that notion.
Yeah. It's kind of like the idea of, you know, taking old films and turning them into IMAX. You're just like, you don't need to do that, or turn them into 3D or whatever.
Right. Why would you? It's perfect how it is. You know, the imperfections are the perfection.
Band merch is incredibly important to our independent music community. And the place that you should go to buy all of your band merch is rockabilia.com. You've heard me speak about them many times in this podcast, but I am incredibly passionate about what they do. For one, it's all officially licensed stuff. For two, it's high quality. And three, use this promo code 100words that gets you 10% off of your order. And you will be able to buy yourself some new stuff. You can buy friends and family. And they have so many things. They have over 500,000 items. You can get lost in their website for hours and have so much fun just stacking your cart with all of this, you know, long sleeves, short sleeves, sweaters, towels. They have everything you could possibly want from band merch. You can, you know, posters, they got it all. So please go to rockabilia.com, use this code 100words, and it will get shipped to you fast, friendly customer service in case you have any issues, and it's independently run. These are punk and hardcore kids that are behind the scenes doing the work for all of these bands, and I love them for it. So rockabilia.com, 100 words is the promo code. Go enjoy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And so, I mean, like you mentioned with your father as a, you know, outdoorsman and, you know, being able to expose you to the nature and, you know, doing that whole thing. Did you kind of find your identity in that? Or were you also like a sports kid? You know, like, did you care about school? What identity were you building for yourself?
I mean, the music part was a huge component, just counterculture. You know, I didn't I never really identified with the popular kids, if you will. So that, you know, the music was, you know, I play music, I listen to music, but also the ideologies attached with that. And, you know, the misfit angle was certainly part of who I was and am. I think, you know, I, as a kid or as a teenager, I really appreciated the outdoors. I didn't consider that a component of my identity. Now I absolutely would. You know, I think my parents made me suffer through Little League and soccer. I was certainly the one like picking daisies in left field. Having said that, I did have the California experience of being heavily into skateboarding. And that also, you know, I should have mentioned this, Ray, that I think also provided me with some musical pathways, right? Like old skate videos definitely had some banger soundtracks with some great punk songs on them or hip hop songs. So that was a way of getting exposed to, you know, to music as well. And yeah, I think, you know, skate culture played into my identity at that point too. These days I just surf a ton because I'll skate around for fun, but, I will break a hip and tap that life alert button if I try anything real. So,
right. Yeah. You know, your limitations,
right. Yeah. The California board sports thing that I factored in as well.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because it definitely, even if you did not have a proclivity at, you know, standing up on a board, whether it was surf or skate, you were undoubtedly influenced by it. Like you cared about it. You consumed the cult. You bought surf magazines or like you said, skate videos, even if you didn't do it. Like that was just kind of like, again, almost a rite of passage.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so ingrained in California culture. It's just like omnipresent, you know, like you see kids wearing like all the gear and yeah, maybe they don't skate. Maybe they don't surf. It's just like, it's just part of the culture here. And even if you hate it, you're going to encounter it.
Yeah, no, totally. And did you care about like, you know, high school as you started to, you know, get more autonomy on your own? Did you apply, you know, quote unquote, apply yourself, as you would say, to your students?
I did decently in the subjects that I enjoyed or the ones that I could comprehend. So, yeah, I mean, I gravitated to language arts. only when I had a decent teacher, and there are just a handful that come to mind. Most of them I just forgot about. They were neither awful or standout. And I think the way my memory works, at least, is I only remember the really good or bad ones. You know, math and science, not so much my thing. That's by no means to disregard them or downplay them or their importance. I just wasn't interested in it, and I was not successful. I still struggle with basic math. So I did, you know, I think I did all right in high school, you know, probably around like a B, high C deal, and got into a bunch of schools and then stayed local to keep playing music and dropped out quickly. And went on tour for a long time, and then slowly started working college back into an alternating tour schedule, semester on, kind of semester off, while the Ghost was active and while I was in Chicago.
Got it. And what was your, I guess, your first band experience? Like, you know, that was out of the garage, proverbially, you know, where you were like actually releasing music and stuff like that.
Oh, high school, just a couple bands that I will not mention.
I will leave nameless.
Yes. But, you know, we played out. I was in two projects, one kind of main deal and then another one with friends, and, you know, Berkeley Square all the time, Gilman here and there, and then, you know, your run-of-the-mill teen center or DIY setup. I would say that my first, like, truly active band would be the Wonder Years, not to be confused with the contemporary Wonder Years.
Right.
that was like a right after high school kind of deal. And that band started touring fairly actively, and then much more so in the later incarnation or the altered lineup version of that band.
Right. Right. And what drew you to, you know, the idea and the subculture, and to dive in as deep as you did, where you wanted to play in a band. And like you said, you were also influenced by, you know, the you know, political nature and just like that subculture started to seep into you. What do you think kind of drew you to that?
I mean, you know, a general sense of alienation as a teenager, which I think no matter where you're at as a teenager, that's going to play in. How you handle that is going to differ person to person. But I didn't feel like I fit in with standardized high school culture. And I also really just that lyrical approach, you know, again, going back to something like Op Ivy, it was in social culture as a teenager, but also starting to get in touch with global issues or community issues. There was a lot out there that didn't seem right, that was angering me. And the music aligned with that. And that was like, it's honestly that approach to me, and, you know, looking at the lyrics that really influenced me, looking at the friendships that I built or the relationships that I built, and, you know, using music as kind of the tool to catalyze some form of change on a personal level or on a larger level, like that is more important to me than the music itself. So, that's the connection there.
Right. And did you, immediately get drawn to, you know, guitar, vocals, like, you know, what was your evolution there? Was that always the thing?
Yeah, I got a guitar. That was the first, you know, I took a little bit of piano as a kid. We had an old piano in our house. And I knew a little bit from that, but I picked up a guitar and was basically, I just mostly self-taught. I think I had lessons for a little while, but you know how that is when you're a kid. It's like, I don't want to learn this fucking Megadeth song. You know, I wasn't into metal, and that's like, I don't know. I playing by ear is not something, or learning other people's songs, let's say, wasn't something I was super interested in, which is, I feel like that's somewhat atypical for teenagers that are coming into music. I kind of just started writing, and I didn't learn how to play something by ear until years and years later. I'm still not that great at it. I'm very slow when I have to pick something up that someone else has written or recorded. And then the vocal thing, I can't recall exactly. I think I just wanted to write my own songs. I was an awful, awful singer in high school. Not much has changed. Slow progress.
Yeah. You're like incrementally better.
Yeah.
Well, that, and I think, partially because of that. I mean, we joke around about the vocals, but I think that, you know, the way that, you know, all of your bands and projects have kind of gone, you have brought a, you know, in my opinion, a unique approach to the way that it's like, I mean, yes, there's obviously the idea of like, oh, you either sing, talk, sing, scream, like, you know, in the context of independent music, but you know, you've always kind of, you dabbled in all of it, as it were. And is that just kind of a function of like, I want to stretch myself and learn more? Or is that just kind of like, oh, this fits the music, so I'll do it here?
No, I think it was certainly stretching myself and then realizing that, hey, certain things I'm doing sound like utter shit. So don't do that anymore. It's, you know, it's a work in progress, trial and error. Obviously, you know, screaming, it's so transparent when it's not sincere. And I never wanted to do that. I never wanted to just scream to scream. You know, I think that you need to, for lack of better words, you need to truly feel it. And you know, other parts might require a more subtle approach. And that's not to say that you're not feeling that as much, but, the screaming just became, an experimental thing. Obviously I was listening to some bands that were taking that approach. I think that, as of now and going back, I don't know, maybe as far as 20 years, 15 years, that there is a style to what I'm doing, but, the way it came about was never planned out. It just kind of happened that way. It evolved out of, again, that trial and error, method and that experimentation.
Right. Yeah. It's like, well, this didn't work, so I guess I'm going to try to do it this way or what have you.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so like you said, the Wonder Years was kind of your first thing getting out there in regards to, you know, being more active in touring. And I'm sure the, you know, I'm using air quotes here, but the business implications of like, oh, we actually get paid $200 to play this show or whatever.
Or five, you know?
Yeah. Or five, right. Either or, like, yeah, money was coming in. It's not like it meant anything because of that reason, but, you know, how, like, was that all just like incredibly exciting as that stuff started to happen? Or were there certain aspects of it that you were like, oh, this is weird, this isn't what I anticipated?
I mean, I was the touring element, I was completely enamored by it. You know, just having that opportunity to travel and to see the country, and then later with the Ghost, Europe and Canada. You know, wow, how lucky was I? And that shit too gave me, having dropped out of college for a while, I think that that was more impactful and educational by far than just taking the standard route and jumping right into a 4-year school would have been. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, totally. It's like the, you learned more doing this than you would have sitting in a classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the business angle and the money stuff, I mean, affording that lifestyle was always a struggle. No band I've ever been in, provided me or anyone else with a means of sustaining ourselves. So, you know, figuring out a way to, what job are you going to work to be able to do this? Again, going back to Chicago, where are you going to live, where you can afford to do this? So yeah, I mean, the business factor during the Wonder Years never really got under my skin. It was never something I was super interested in. I think the Ghost was a far more serious band and saw a bit more success. So that became more of a factor with that band, you know, and, I would say it was never, the motive was never money, but being on the right tours or having the right amount of exposure to people was an issue. And I found, you know, in hindsight, that the more I cared about that stuff and the more serious I was with my pursuits or pushing bandmates to, you know, practice harder, things of that nature, the shittier I became as a person. And I think it points, the music suffered too, and it certainly frayed relationships. So yeah.
No, that, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because I definitely think that, especially too, where it's like, you know, usually, you know, second bands, like, especially if you've cut your teeth on, like you said, you know, with a previous experience of touring, and then, you know, once the Ghost comes into play, and then you're like, okay, well, I've learned from any previous mistakes I've made, so like, I'm going to try to do it better or whatever. And then sometimes, yeah, you end up pushing on something that it's just like, oh, like I never would have done this in this other band. Why am I doing this here? But you obviously in the middle of it, you can't contextualize that.
Yeah. I had to basically, you know, when I moved back to California from Chicago, well, I would say too that, you know, the Ghost disbanded and I stayed in Chicago for a couple of years. I was sort of doing Honolulu stuff. But it really kind of took me taking a break, not a real long one, but taking a break from music and looking back at myself and some choices I had made and some friendships that I had damaged. And just reflecting on that and realizing, okay, don't do this again. That's not you. That didn't work out well. And it's not the best you can do, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
People I've played with, and the people involved in the music community to me are far more important than any, you know, band I've ever been in as a whole or whatever that band's released, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Cause I mean, yeah, the relationships will, I mean, you know, technically records last as well, but you know, the relationships are clearly more, you know, more meaningful in the long term.
Yeah. I wondered there for a while. I was like, can I break up my own solo project? Is that,
you know? True.
Some people I think would view me in terms of the business sense, not so much the relationships there. Like I said, there were some low moments and some damaged friendships here and there, but a lot of people in terms of, could I have been more quote unquote successful, think that I'm a bit of a self saboteur when it comes to that. And I don't mind that. That's fine. You know,
sure.
If I feel like something's right for me, then I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Well, and that's maybe why you don't, call your solo endeavor after your own name, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, I can break it up and then I can just put out records under my name. It's fine.
There you go.
walk me through the, you know, because I know when the Ghost came on my radar was definitely, you know, this is a hospital and some records. It was such an interesting time because like some was a really weird label where it was like people were paying attention to it because of the obvious connection with, you know, Walter from Quicksand. But then, you know, there was no, I guess, organized push for this label to be like, you know, the next big thing, like, you know, what I mean, bad examples, but like Drive-Thru Records or whatever the case may be. But so, I mean, how'd you even get hooked up with like some records in the first place?
So no joke, I sent them a demo and we got picked up.
That's amazing. That like, yeah, I was like, just never happens.
When I got a response, I was like, I always just thought this was just like buying like a scratcher at the fucking convenience store, you know, like bands actually get picked up from demos.
Right.
So that's how that went down. You know, it was great. We were fans of certainly Hot Water. And, you know, there were like Air Type 11 was a phenomenal band too. The Ghost toured a ton with The Exit. You know, I musically we were fairly different, but they were a fantastic band.
Oh, so good. I honestly, you mentioning that just like gave me all the warm fuzzies because I just like, I remember at one point it was like, hey, so these guys are going to be like the next Police. And it's like, what? Well, I don't know about that, but like, they're really, really good.
Yeah. They're a fantastic band. So yeah, I mean, that's how that landed. And, you know, some was a great label. If we were really in need, if our van completely broke down and we were out of cash, personally or in a band fund, they would loan it to us. I mean, the shit was coming out of any or added to recoup costs. But,
right.
You know, there were times where we would have been absolutely destroyed without their help. And, you know, they certainly promoted those records and put in some work. So that was a great experience overall. And, you know, spending time with those guys in New York was really fun. Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
That's cool. And I love that story because, yeah, you don't hear those exceptions of like, yeah, because you just assume that they go to some P.O. box and then, you know, they stack up for months and months and then maybe one person listens to one of them and then that's it.
Yeah. Maybe it was, sometimes I wonder though, if it was just like, I don't know, some like dare joke with the label guys, right? Like they're all sitting around doing their thing. Like, oh, what if we just reach into the box, whatever we pull out, we have to put out the record. That's like a joke challenge. See if you can do this and actually sell some records, you know?
Right. Totally. This is a total experiment. Let's throw this against the wall and see what sticks. As you started to, you know, navigate being on a label and touring and stuff like, did you guys have management? And I know that you worked with booking agents, like you mentioned.
Yeah, we had a manager for a while. And honestly, unless my mind is rewriting history, like nothing really ever came of it. I don't know if anything should have come of it. The only thing that really stands out is he was connected to that 90s, like, I don't even want to honor them with the term grunge. I would just say alt rock band Sponge. Do you remember them?
Oh, dude, yeah. Pinata, like Rotting Pinata or something like that. Yeah, I remember that record.
So the guy who managed the Ghost offered me a job guitar teching for Sponge.
So, wow, that's incredible.
Which I did not take, and I think that I can restring guitars very quickly, and I think he became aware of that. That's the only reason that happened. And then the other thing that went down was, we weren't really interested in major label conversations, nor was there a lot of interest coming from that circle in our direction. But he got us some meeting with Warner Brothers in LA, and we were on tour with the Velveteen. That's who it was. And you know, everyone was really conflicted, just like, oh, whatever, just show up. It's free lunch, right? And you know, we wanted free lunch at that point. So we get into the office and they had gotten takeout sandwiches. And at that point I knew, I was like, it's takeout sandwiches. Like they don't give a shit about us, you know?
Right.
And, I remember this A&R rep, the first thing she said was, you know, I booked a Fugazi show once. Like that's her buy-in point with us. And we're just over it. Our roadie just basically without you know, asking the band, destroyed, said some really crude shit about the Fugazi comment, and just ripped into major labels and, you know, effectively destroyed any like semblance of a chance of working with that record label on the spot. And we had, at least I didn't have any animosity towards him for doing that. I don't think anyone really did. So.
Right. You're like, well, okay. Yeah. Good riddance. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's your manager answer right there.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, because that also was like a really transitionary time for, you know, the whole independent music industry in general, because you were coming off of the heels of, you know, these bands that were on Warped Tour all of a sudden being successful, like from a mainstream perspective and major label interest and all this stuff. So I'm sure, like you said, you were kind of put in these, you know, maybe situations that you probably wouldn't have found yourself, you know, 5 years prior or 5 years after the fact. It was just that sweet spot of that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think it's pretty critical for bands that are in that position. Obviously, first, like, check your ethics. What do you feel good about? What do you want? Where's your comfort level at with this whole thing? And you know, I certainly have strong opinions there that would sway me against being on a larger or major label like that. But also, you know, you have to analyze, you know, looking at the Ghost, there was no way that could have been a commercially successful band without drastically altering our sound. I think sometimes bands or individuals in bands kind of fail to recognize that within what they're doing. And I guess if you're willing to completely change your sound to cater or to pander, fine, but I really doubt I would have. And there's just no way it would have ever been commercially successful or widely accepted.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Unless, like you said, it's a huge pivot where it's like, okay, well, the 20% of them is good, so we need to change the 80% of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. And I remember too, like, once you, because you started to do Hanalei. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Hanalei? Correct.
Okay. You started to do that kind of towards the tail end, well, not the tail end, but like around the second LP of The Ghost. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I want to say that's about right. I would have to start researching on.
Yeah.
Right. Really figured out, but it was definitely, I started it up while The Ghost was still an active band.
Right. Because I do remember at that time I was working at an independent record store. And, you know, once that, you know, those releases started to, you know, hit where it's like, oh, you know, Brian from The Ghost. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then, you know, hearing, and it was interesting too, because I have a distinct memory of the idea that was like, okay, like, you know, this is going to make you laugh where it's like, you know, the postal service was huge. And so it's like, maybe this is his, you know, experiment into the social, you know, the solo project endeavor, which of course is like not actually reflective of what the sound is at all. But, you know, I don't know if people were trying to kind of like put you in certain corners because of it's like, oh, this is the side project of his band. Like, this is just this cute thing he's doing. Like, don't even really pay too much attention to it. Or am I just kind of like reading way too far into it?
No, I mean, I think that's completely valid. I wasn't super into the postal service, but you know, I think me trying to meddle in the electronic genre or start programming beats was, not great. And
sure.
I didn't know really what I was doing. I was just kind of experimenting. And I would say that hip hop was more of an influence in that. But you know, that first Hanalei records, in my opinion, just kind of garbage. There might be some moments on it, but to your second point there, Ray, too, it's like, I was young and you know, I probably felt cocky. So I'm, you know, I could totally do a solo record. And no, it wasn't that great. And I think that you still see that a lot, right? People are like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this alt country thing, right? Like, I'm a singer in a band, I got this. And maybe you don't, you know. It's like, I'm glad that I branched out and tried that, and it's led to a lot of other things, and here we are with another Hanalei record out. But sometimes it's like, staying in your lane is the best advice.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree, but at the same time, it's like, once you start to flex those creative muscles, especially in regards to like, I can't bring this stuff to the band that I play in. Like, you know, I'll either be like laughed out of the room because we're trying to, you know, like, square peg round hole scenario, or, you know, you'll get laughed at because like, this dude, like, this is terrible. Like, of course we can't do anything with this for our band, but it does open you up to being able to explore different sonic options.
Right. And that becomes like a whole other line, you know. It's like, it's almost like, I wouldn't say starting over, but you're learning an entirely new craft. And that becomes its own separate evolution. And, you know, that's what I did with that. It took me a while. You know, I think the second record was much better. It sounded completely different. The third ones, that came out about 10 years ago, and that one was, I'd say that's maybe my favorite. And I shouldn't say that considering I just released a new record, but it came together over time.
Right, right. Well, and I mean, you're being honest, like you're your own, probably you're your own worst critic. So, you know, you can plant that stake in the ground. I get it.
But the promo machine, right? No,
I know, right? It's like, the newest is the most sonically compelling and heaviest, and, you know, insert adjective here. I'm going to guess, like, you know, as the ghost started to, you know, wind down, and like what you were talking about in regards to, you know, relationships started to fray, and like, you know, real world implications start to, you know, play into it, where it's like, dude, I can't sit here and like tour for 10 years for $10 or whatever. I got to, like, you know, figure out what I'm going to do with my life. Was it hard for you to kind of, I guess, transition out of that, you know, really rigorous touring schedule? Or was that kind of like a welcome change at a certain point?
I mean, I think that, yes, it was a welcome change. And having, considering that the ghost was doing that, you know, a couple of us were in school, so we were doing that semester on, semester off kind of approach for a little while there. And that provided a nice transition or segue into a more relaxed touring schedule. And when Hanley was a full band, you know, I was still in Chicago and we did some touring. It just certainly wasn't as active as what the ghost had been doing. And then, you know, later on, like now I'm like, I don't, you know, given COVID, yeah, sure, I'd go on tour. I'd do anything to go hang out and travel with people, you know. But I don't, in a general sense, I don't want to do that again. You know, I had my fill. I got so much of it in, and I'm so grateful to have had those experiences. But, you know, as you suggested, yeah, it's not sustainable to keep doing that for $10 a day or from a health level, you know. For certain individuals, like drinking and drugs come into play. You're not getting any exercise. It just becomes grueling, you know. I don't think it was that hard for me. And I kind of have transferred over the years that travel passion from touring into just personal travel or when I can, I'll do a surf trip down to Central America or something like that. And it's, you know, I definitely have the bug, and there are other ways to tap into that.
It's funny you say that, because it does, like, for, you know, your average civilian or normal person that, like, you know, takes a vacation and like actually sees a city, as opposed to our experience of touring and being like, hey, I saw a 3 blocks radius, like, you know, I saw the local coffee shop or whatever, but that was it. And it's funny when you're like, oh, I can actually go to a place and like spend time there as opposed to 8 hours there.
Totally. Yeah, I remember like one of the first larger trips I did after kind of bowing out of heavy touring, and that you just nailed it. It was just that, just like, wow, I'm here. I can experience all this. I don't have to look at an itinerary or get in the van and do an overnight drive. I can just take this in. So I think that's affected me too. You know, there are people that when they travel, everything is planned out, right? There's the whole, like, the family itinerary. I hate that shit. I can't stand it, because that's what we did when we toured, you know, and you know that. And it's, now when I go somewhere, I kind of just like to post up in one little region and really take that in on a deep level, rather than try to experience little tidbits rushing around here and there.
Right. Yeah. It's like, here's your plan for the day. Hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. Like,
yeah.
It has, you know, any, because you've been teaching for over 10 years now, right? Or no?
This is your 10 or 11. It might be 10. I had a half year, which was weird, but, yeah, let's just say 10.
Okay. Yeah. We'll round it up. I'm going to guess at some point, students have discovered your, you know, either musical past or the fact that you know, putting out records and like that sort of stuff. Do you try, not to hide it, but, like, you know, how do you react when people kind of bring that stuff up?
I mean, I'm certainly not going to encourage anyone to go looking for it. I will tell students that, you know, when they're asking about my background and prior teaching, like, yeah, I used to do music stuff and I traveled a ton doing it and it was great. If you're interested, you know, in doing that yourself, talk to me about it. But yeah, I'd say my stance with that's fairly neutral. I'm not encouraging anyone to look for it. I'm not trying to completely hide it. I definitely did a personal YouTube purge when I first started teaching. So anything scandalous has got to go. And there's still some stuff that might be questionable in certain schools, but I don't know. I've only really worked in 2 schools. My last job I had for 9 years and left by choice to take this new one on. But I would like to think that the jobs I take, or that are offered to me, if, you know, if I'm accepted, then it's, nothing is going to be a problem on that tip, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's not like you're setting up a merch table at the front of the classroom. Like, hey, you know, like, guys, I put out a new record.
Right. And I, you know, it's like, there's, you can find interviews where I've gotten fairly political, and you know, I think certain schools that something like that might be a problem. Where I'm at now, I doubt it would be, and knock on wood. There we go.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. This won't get you fired, Brian. And the last thing I want to hit on was when you are doing, creating your own music and everything from, soup to nuts in regards to, art direction and like working with labels and figuring out a way to distribute it. This is what you've been doing for, the past, 10 to 15 years as you've progressively released more music. There are certain, limitations within that where it's like, you are only able to, kind of create what your, talent will allow, I mean, obviously you can work with collaborators and everything, but, how have you found, that journey? Clearly you like it because you're still doing it, but, do you, enjoy the constructs of what the quote unquote solo project exists in?
Yeah, I do. And, as you've said, there are limitations, both in terms of just being one person and then certainly the limitations of my talents. And, I'm aware of where I'm at as a musician. And I have very high expectations, but they're within reason. I really enjoy solo work in the modern day because I can record at home and basically layer the shit out of things, at some points I've done it to just an incredibly excessive extent. And then I need to go back and pull them out. I have endless time. I can record for free. And then it's very easy to collaborate with people sending files if you want to bring other folks or friends in. It's great. The problem with that though, becomes that if you ask me to go, down to the local venue and play songs off my new record as my just by myself, there's like maybe one or two that would sound decent because I recorded it as if it's a full band, and my friend played drums on the new record too. The drums aren't really the limitation though. It's more the layered guitars and relying on leads as kind of hooks, more so than vocals. So yeah, we'll see. But I certainly enjoyed the process. It's so enjoyable and at times consuming, and I get obsessive with it. I'm going to take a break for a while on it, but yeah.
Right. No, that's cool. And I think it is, there is that notion, and I know you probably wrestle around with it, like that self-indulgent nature where it's just like, why are people, cause everyone is always feeling some level of imposter syndrome where it's like, why should people even care and pay attention to, what I'm doing, but then getting over that hump to be like, oh, well, I just want to create regardless of who is listening. I mean, it's cool if 10 people listen, and it's even cooler if 100 people listen, but if one person listens, then, I find validity in that in and of itself.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. There's no way I could stop doing this. I think the breaks are healthy because you reset and then you kind of, I really, at least for me creatively, I can't force it. It's got to come from just like lightning bolts of inspiration, which I find that I need moments of rest and relaxation in order to get those. But it's just in me at this point. I've done it for so long. I wouldn't know how to not do it.
Right. It's like too bad world. This is what you're getting, whether you like it or not. No, but I mean, joking aside, I think it's been really cool to, watch your own musical progression and you being able to do these things as, either regularly or sporadically as you want to, and then put them out and still obviously have people be like, oh, that's cool. I wasn't expecting a new Hanalei record, but like, here we are. And like, let's reckon with it.
Yeah. And I'm kind of shocked that people still want to listen to it or that, that people want to put it out. Like I suggested, I would do it regardless of that, but if you're not in that industry game, you're enabled to do that, right? Whereas if you are an actively touring band and the record label's concerned with sales, like you need to be putting out X amount of records in X amount of years. And that's not just contractually speaking, that's just the general expectation, right, of listeners and people in the industry. And I don't like playing that game. So it's been, like I said, 10 years since I last released the Hanalei record. And there's a few 7 inches in between there, but, that's, you know, I don't think a lot of people are doing that, but I don't know. I just don't care.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're like, hey man, let me just keep doing what I'm doing. And that's going to make me happy.
Yep. Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for hanging out, Brian. I really appreciate it. Right. Thanks for letting me ping pong around your life.
Oh, and this is a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
There we go. That was Brian. Thank you very much for hanging out, Brian. It was a fun chat and an enlightening conversation, and I appreciated the insight you were able to share about your band and all my curiosity. So that was fun. Next week, we actually have another Brian on the show, which is funny because I didn't mean for that to happen, but it did. His name is Brian Fair. He plays in a band called Overcast. He played in a band called Shadows Fall. He is, in my mind, a Massachusetts hardcore slash metal legend. This dude is awesome. I've traveled in his orbit for many years. You know, I worked at Century Media when Shadows Fall was on the label. I never got to really interact with him very much, but I've kind of watched him from afar. And so when I was able to have him on the show and have a deeper conversation with him, I was stoked because I love all of his bands, and it was really, really interesting to talk to a person who, you know, achieved a lot of amazing things that people can't achieve on a regular basis with an independent music, and how he's got a really healthy perspective on it. He just, you know, continues to pursue all of his, you know, creative endeavors with the same sort of passion and vigor that he had when, you know, Overcast first started to gig around when he was like 17, 18 years old. So really cool stuff. Brian Fair on the show next week. And until then, please be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.